Welcome to Babbittville Radio, a place where you'll hear great conversations with the world's best and most inspirational runners, triathletes, and cyclists. Endurance lives here. Now, here's your host, USA Triathlon and Ironman Triathlon Hall of Famer, Bob Babbitt.
Welcome to Babbittville Radio. My name is Bob Babbitt. We are brought to you by the Tough Man Triathlon Series. That's toughmantri.com. By VeloFix.com, the world's coolest mobile bike shop. ATV Swim Spas, the official training vessel of six-time Ironman World Champion Dave Scott. Our Challenged Athletes Foundation, we have raised over $80 million, sent out over 18,000 grants to keep challenged athletes in the game of life through sport. Check us out on Babbittville.com or on iTunes. And as always, endurance lives here. With the 40th anniversary of the Ironman coming up in 2018, it's about time to have back on our show the original Ironman world champion, Mr. Gordon Haller, who won the race back in 1978, going 11:46 back then. No roads were blocked off. Nobody even knew if you could complete the thing in one day. Gordon, how the heck you doing?
I'm doing just fine, Bob.
It's always, always so much fun to catch up with you. So you've done 17 Ironmans in Hawaii, right?
Yep.
And Japan, Canada, Lanzarote, and then the three iron distance races over on Maui. So you've done 17, and then you're coming back for the 40th anniversary. Will that be your 18th?
That would be my 18th there, yeah, 24th overall.
Wow, 24th overall. That is amazing. So take me back. Growing up, were you a runner, a swimmer? What was your background?
Running was my main thing. I always wanted to be the fastest kid in my class. In the second grade, we had we missed a recess, and the teacher made up for it by letting us run around the school once. I got second behind a little girl, so that kind of got my fires going, and I was the fastest kid in the class into high school, and everybody started shaving, and I wasn't yet.
So did you run cross-country and track through high school and college?
Yes, no. I didn't run my freshman and sophomore years. My brother did. He's a year younger, and of course that was a competitive thing. So I went out my junior year, and I was third man on the team, and he was fourth. Then my senior year, same third and fourth. And then college, I ran three of the 4 years because I was really sick the summer between my freshman and sophomore years and wasn't well enough by fall to actually run. I was the manager for the cross-country team. My brother's on that team again. And I tried to work out with him, and I'd run a lap, and then I'd just cough, and then I couldn't.
What'd you have?
Well, for the summer of 69, I had just a ton of things. I had strep throat, tonsillitis, mono, hepatitis, a trench mouth, some kind of...
What? How'd you get all that?
Thing. Oh, there's a ton of things. I couldn't... My legs were paralyzed for a while, so I just wasn't in very good health.
How did when you're talking about that list of what you were dealing with, how did the doctors figure out what was going on?
Well, the strep throat was pretty easy.
Yeah.
And then I got tonsillitis because apparently I'd had tonsillitis the summer before because right after track season, I tried to run some summer meets and just didn't have it, but I didn't recognize, I thought I was just tired and didn't worry about it. And then after my senior year in high school, it was even worse. So by the time I got to after my freshman year in college, it was pretty bad.
Wow.
So I was 19 when I had my tonsils out. Kind of old for that.
So you're dealing with all that, and then you were able to run again, what, your sophomore, junior year?
Yeah, I ran track my sophomore year, and actually ended up with the fastest mile on the team by the end of the season. At the start of the season, I was sucking swamp water behind everybody, but it was a good finish. My brother was second. Yeah.
So that sounds like that battle between you and your brother, you being one spot in front of him, was pretty important.
Well, yeah, I remember this one time, the one time the coach videotaped the entire track meet.
Yeah,
and so we were running the 2 mile, and the other team didn't have any really good runners, so it was just the two of us racing. I led the first, five laps, and then he decided I was going too slow, so he passed me, and I followed him for a lap. And I thought, well, I can't let him do that, so I passed him, and I put on this. I just started my kick 600 yards out and figured I'd blow him away. Well, when I crossed the finish line, I turned around. He's like 1 second behind me.
Oh my God! And you've got that on tape.
Yep. Well, I don't have it now. I don't know whatever the coach did it. But when we were watching it in track practice afterwards, everybody got really bored, especially the sprinters, because they're used to 10 seconds and they're done.
Right. Yeah, so they have to watch this full mile.
We're out there for 10 minutes, you know.
God. What was your PR? What were some of your PRs when you talk about, you know, the mile, 5K, 10K, that type of thing?
Well, after I got out of college is when I did all my PRs.
Right.
I ran a 420.5 mile, trying to get 420, just couldn't quite do it. And I ran, let's see, my best 5K was 14:48.
Wow.
On the track. My best 10K was on the track. I'm not sure what it was. It was like 31-0 something. But on the road, it was more like 30:35.
Wow. Okay, so you had some real wheels.
Yeah, the marathon at 2:27.
Yes. And so all of this is long before you even could spell the word triathlon.
That's true.
When did you first hear about this? And you went to college where? Was this back east?
No, it was in Oregon where I grew up. A small
okay.
college called Pacific University up in near Portland.
Yeah. And so out of college, is that when you moved over to Hawaii?
Yeah, I won the draft lottery in 1969 and had to enlist in the military Then I went to OCS in Rhode Island and got my commission as an ensign. I was stationed at St. Pat's Fleet, Pearl Harbor.
Ah, because of that brought you to Hawaii.
Yeah, although my roommate and I from college had planned to go to Hawaii after we graduated anyway. Well, he won the draft lottery also, went to OCS with me, went to boot camp together before that, and we both got stationed in Hawaii. So we made it anyway, whether we wanted to or not, the way we did it.
So this is what year?
That was 1972
okay.
when we actually got to Hawaii. In fact, I arrived on Friday the 13th of October, which was the Navy's birthday, too.
Nice. So you're over there in Hawaii, and when did you start driving a cab when you got out of the service, or were you doing that while you were in the service?
It was after. Well, I was still in the reserves.
Gotcha.
What I did was I got transferred to Long Beach in 74,
mm-hmm.
and then spent a year on active duty there, Mine Squadron 5.
Yep.
And then I had to decide whether I wanted to augment and go regular Navy or go to the reserves. And so I basically quit the Navy and went in the and I didn't even go to the reserves. I owed them 1 year, but I didn't have to actually drill or anything.
Right.
But about 6 months into it, I mean, I was working in real estate and some other, and working in the fitness centers and basically bumming it. And I went back to Hawaii to run the around the island relay on Oahu with my old team.
The perimeter relay, yeah.
Yeah, perimeter relay, yeah. And they had a hurricane and postponed. I mean, they actually started the race, and a couple hours in, it got so bad they went out and picked everybody up, and we had to start the race over 2 weeks later. Well, that was after my plane ticket had expired, past my time to go back to Long Beach. So I just cashed my ticket in and stayed for 3 more years, and that's when I started driving the taxi.
So you're driving a taxi, and being a workout guy, I'm assuming that you would do a fair, do a workout, do a fair, do a workout. How did you balance the – because we look at that as training nowadays, but that was your lifestyle, right?
It was my lifestyle. I didn't have a car, so my taxi was my car, but I got to work by running or riding my bike to the taxi company, stand, whatever it was,
sure.
in the garage. And then I do my 12-hour shift and then run or ride back home. I was staying in a house up on Tantalus and paying my rent by helping them remodel the house because I have skills in the construction area.
Right.
My family did that. That's how I grew up. And I did other things besides drive the taxi. I mean, I worked part-time at a fitness center, including Nautilus, which
right.
gets us into the Ironman, But that's how I paid for my membership, was being a part-time employee there so I could work out all I wanted to. I work at night with a taxi, so I would get off shift at 6 in the morning, and then I'd go over to one of the fitness centers and work out for a couple hours, and then go home and get a few hours nap.
Now, you weren't like the rest of us who went out and got some bike at a flea market or a garage sale. You had a pretty high-quality bike.
Well, here's the story on the bikes of the first race.
Yeah.
I bought a bike in November of 72 when I first got to Hawaii. And it was a decent bike. It wasn't a racing bike. It was but it was more than just a tootle around beachcomber bike. It was a Raleigh.
Right.
I'd had one before in college, and it worked fine. I wasn't planning on racing 112 miles or anything
right.
with it. But I did put a lot of miles in it. On it. I was putting 4,000 or 5,000 miles a year on it. But that's my transportation too.
Sure.
It wasn't just working out. And for the race, Hank Grimmon, Valerie Silk's ex-husband, he rented a really nice racing bike from a kid at the McCulley Bike Shop, and I can't remember the kid's name, but I remember where I got it, and I could probably trace him down somehow. McCulley might have a record of that, but it was a really nice bike, but it had the straight block gearing, didn't have anything for climbing hills.
Ah.
So I took my bike along with me in my team van, and when we got to the point, Haleiwa, where we had to ride over the top of the island, I switched to my bike.
Oh, so yeah, that's right. There really weren't any rules like that. You had a crew with you, so you could bring a spare bike.
Sure. Yeah, we had all kinds of cool stuff. I mean, I had food to hand me. I had a photographer and a cook and a masseuse and, everything. My team manager was really good. He was a former modern pentathlete.
Ah.
And his name was Steve Epperle. And if you see the picture of me standing there getting ready to run the marathon, that's right. Him giving me my massage on my shoulders.
So when did you first hear about, this Ironman thing through the Perimeter Relay? Because when John and Judy sort of decided to put it on?
Kind of loosely.
Yeah.
I don't think I was at that particular banquet. I mm-hmm. don't remember that happening, but I may have been on the other side of the room. Because I've been to a few of those Perimeter Relay banquets. They weren't really banquets, it was beer drinking. But,
right.
I had gone to the mainland in November of 77. Which is somewhat after, apparently, that took place.
Yeah.
And I did the Marine Corps Marathon in November of 77, just past the anniversary of that. It's November 4th, right? Did that, did the 227, 35, and finished 4th out of the military and 16th overall out of, 3,000 whatever runners.
Wow.
And then I did a couple of races in California. I won an 8-mile race in the Mojave Desert, and it was feeling pretty good, but. And went back, finally got back to Hawaii, and just in time for the Honolulu Marathon. Had a little sciatic nerve problem kick up, and at 6 miles I dropped out. I was trying to run with a friend of mine to pace him, because I knew I wasn't going to run a 2:27 again that soon. But I had to drop out. And where I dropped out was next to somebody I knew, but I can't remember who that was either, and I'm really sorry I can't remember his name.
That's okay.
He told me about this race they invented for me, because he knew I did. I was running, biking, and swimming and whatnot.
Is that what he said? He said, hey, Gordon, there's this event that's coming up, and this was invented for you.
Yeah, well, he was being facetious, I think.
Yeah.
He knew that that's what I did, and that's what he said. And so I said, oh, I can do that. I do that all the time. He said, yeah, I know.
that's basically what I do on a daily basis, swim 2.4, ride 112, and run 26.2.
Well, when I was first stationed there, we had a weird watch rotation. We would do 2 day watches in a row, then double back and do 2 mid watches, and then double back and do 2 eve watches. So in 5 days, you do 6 8-hour shifts. But since it was top secret stuff, we couldn't take work home, couldn't work overtime because it was 24/7, 3 shifts a day. And so sometimes I've had lots of time to work out, sometimes I have very little. And on the 3 days off, because it's called 2-2-2-80, we have 80 days off, 80 hours off.
Yeah.
Week. It was an 8-day week. And so I would go out the first day, do a 10-15 mile run in the morning, come back, have breakfast, go out and ride 100 miles, come back, take a nap, go swim a couple thousand meters, go have dinner, and then go run another 10 miles in the evening, which is basically an Ironman.
Yeah.
And then with longer transitions.
God.
And then the next day, the middle day, I would just go out for a nice, easy to a long ride. And run, had to run every day anyway, just a little bit, but not 20 miles, maybe, more like 3 or 4.
So I'm
rest days, semi-rest days.
I'm guessing that, because now when you talk about that stuff, people are like, well, that's a lot of people go out and train all the time. I'm guessing that there weren't a lot of other people doing what you were doing on a regular basis.
That's very true. Most of my friends did, because that's what we did. I had a lot of friends who were high school runners.
Yeah.
Most of the top runners in the state at the time were people I ran with. Some of them were on our Tantalus marathon relay team. one particular, Vernon Matsukawa. I saw him one day running the opposite direction, waved at him, and then turns out he was on one of the teams that I shortly joined thereafter. And so we started training together for those 2 years I was there with the Navy originally, and then a couple of years after that. Then he went off to, in between, he went off to college and at, let's see, where did he go? UCLA.
Okay.
And that was the same time I got transferred to Long Beach. So we trained there together too.
So when they first announced, not announced, but you sign up for this thing, and it's not like you can go online and sign up for something. You sort of have to find John Collins, bring him cash or whatever. I think it was, what was the entry fee, like 10 bucks or 5 bucks or something?
Five bucks.
$5. So you pay your $5. You bring.
We got a refund on it too because we didn't use the whole $5.
Oh.
So it ended up being about $2 or $3.
So it was $2 or $3 to do this thing. And then there was, I think, 18 people were there. 15 started and 12 finished in 78. So when you guys, I mean, this was something you did on a regular basis, but I looked at your training log that you sent me a number of years ago leading into this race, and you did a ton of running, not a heck of a lot of swimming, and a couple of bike rides. Did you have a feel that, okay, I know I can get through this thing, but did you feel that you were one of the better guys there?
Well, I knew I was the only one that had done the bike race.
Oh, you'd done the Around Oahu bike race, so you knew the course.
Yeah, and I'd actually, 5 years before, on the exact same day, February 18th of 73, I did a swim run and the second day of that same bike race in the same day. So I did a triathlon on the Ironman course on the same day as the Ironman 5 years before.
Oh, so this is basically no big deal.
Yeah, I've been over the whole course. I hadn't done the swim, and a lot of the guys, about half the guys that had done that open water swim. I swam in the ocean a few times. I mean, you're in Hawaii, so you kind of have to do that. I did more body surfing than anything else, but I did get some experience. And I like to go to Ala Moana Beach, and because they have a measured 1,000-meter course, you swim up and down the beach. And I would do that every once in a while and make sure I could still do it. But I think the key was that I did a lot of Nautilus workouts.
Yes.
A lot of full body stuff, and I go in the weight room and work out for 2 hours, and it wasn't necessarily heavy strength stuff, although some of it was because you got to build strength as well, but I did a lot of muscular endurance stuff.
You know, it's interesting because Dave Scott became famous for doing a lot of weight work, and a lot of the other triathletes didn't until, you know, really not that long ago. But you early on realized that you've got to balance everything.
Well, yeah, I started lifting weights when I was 15, got my first weight set, so I could play baseball and hit the ball farther, but then I was just a little guy, so I had to be able to hit it over the infielder's head.
So I
got a couple home runs in my career.
On race day, you've got John Dunbar there, who's a Navy SEAL. You come out of the water about 20 minutes behind Dunbar.
Yeah.
What do you remember of the, because again, there was only 15 starters and 12 finishers, so you guys are pretty spread apart. Did you have a sense of where you were compared to the other guys?
Only because Hank told me about it and said, well, you're about 20 minutes behind Dunbar and you're eighth place out of 15. So I was exact middle guy and had a 119 swim. Sometimes it says listed as 120, but I call it 119.
Okay.
And took the usual long transition, went into the Halakoa Hotel in the locker room and showered and changed into
Did you really? You went in and showered. I like it.
Most of us did that because we didn't want to be all salty.
Right. But these weren't quick showers. We were talking, you're going into a locker room, did you feel like in a race where you were racing the shower, or just sort of like, okay, the swim is over, let's get a shower, let's make sure we got the salt off, let's go for a bike ride?
It was more like the shower you take when you've been swimming at the beach and they have those beach showers there.
Yes.
But they didn't have one at that particular beach. You had to go into the locker room to do it. And so it was quick, but not racy-like.
Yes, exactly. So now you're riding, and back then, did you have bike shoes? Because a lot of guys, I remember doing it in just regular tennis shoes.
I wore running shoes, but they were my marathon running shoes. You remember the old Tiger
yes.
Oboris?
Yeah, I do. They were pretty lean. They didn't have a lot to them.
Yeah. No cushion at all, but that's what I ran a 227 in because I didn't weigh anything.
Right.
But they also worked fine as a bike shoe. I still have those in a box here.
That is so cool. So they basically fit well into the cages.
Yes. They slid right in. Because now running shoes sometimes are a little bulky. Try riding
they are. I know.
Bike.
Yeah, they're way too bulky. So you're riding in that, and you had bike shorts. You had chamois and a whole bit.
I had chamois bike shorts, and I had actual toe clips with leather toe straps.
Yes.
And everything.
Yep.
And, of course, we had to wear helmets. We had those leather hairnet helmets that wouldn't save your life. It would keep all the mess in one place when you crash. So.
Yeah, it would keep it in, it was sort of like having a bucket on your head. Basically, it kept all the pieces together if you crashed.
Right. So, used that, and I did have real bike gloves. I actually have all of those things that I wore that day.
Very cool. So you end up, I mean, we're talking a 656 bike ride with no roads blocked off.
Right.
I mean, did you try to follow traffic rules, or you were like, look, okay, like, there's no cars coming, let's go?
Well, we were told to follow traffic rules, and I pretty much do that anyway.
Yeah.
But, you know, if there's nobody around on the North Shore, and,
right.
You know, and there really weren't that many places to stop. The little towns, you go right through, and nothing there. So, I mean, there is now, I guess.
Right. So, food-wise, what did you eat during that race?
Bananas, orange slices, chocolate chip cookies.
Nice.
And I had, let's see, we had ERG. Gookin,
yes.
Ate, remember that?
Bill Gookin, yep.
And, yeah, I knew Bill. Of course, you probably knew him, too.
Oh, yeah.
And I met him when I was stationed in Long Beach. And, my secret weapon was a product called Body Ammo.
I remember that. What exactly was Body Ammo?
Well, they had a couple of different products, and the one I used was for protein sparing. So you take amino acids in these tablets so that your body doesn't eat up the protein in your muscles when you get to a long way into it and you run out of fats and carbohydrates. So apparently worked, but I've also been known as a fat burner. I was tested years ago, and I trained that way so that I could burn fats instead of carbohydrates. I can hit 80% of my max before I even start burning carbs.
So you were way ahead of the curve in terms of understanding the science of this stuff.
I did a lot of studying of it.
I was going to say, because most guys couldn't spell carbohydrate back then.
Yep.
So you get off the bike, and do you know what place you were off the bike?
Second.
Oh, so you were second. So at that point,
I easily had the fastest bike ride.
Yeah, 656. I love that. And
on a 28-pound bike with 28C tires.
Wow.
Actually, there was 27-inch by 1.25 or something like that.
So how did you just rotate the bikes like once or twice? How often did you switch bikes out?
I just changed the one time for climbing over the top of the mountain. Well,
the eight.
So at Holly Eve, I switched to my bike. Because I had the gears to get me up the mountain, plus it was heavier so I could fly faster down the mountain.
Right.
And then coming into the finish, you know, once you get those steel wheels going,
yep,
your momentum carries you pretty well. And although when I came into the Aloha Tower, I went around that last corner, and it rained a little bit, and my back tire slipped.
Oh.
And I almost killed myself coming into the finish.
So now, and we're not talking for people who race nowadays and they're thinking about these big transition areas. This is basically a parking lot at Aloha Tower.
I jumped in the fountain at the tower there to clean the sweat off and dried off, put my running shorts on, and did an interview while Steve massaged my shoulders. So you see that picture, I'm holding a can of Coke and drinking it, and just off to the left of the picture, I'm facing a newspaper guy interviewing me for the story.
During the race?
Yeah.
Nice. Yeah, so it's not like you're racing, but at the same time, you know, people are understanding you sort of want to fuel up. You want to get, you got to take advantage of that transition time.
Yep, casual racing.
Casual racing. So knowing that you're a 227 marathoner and you're, what, like 12 minutes back or something like that at the end of the bike?
Yep, I was 12 minutes behind, and my PR was 12 minutes better than John's.
Right. So you knew it could be a tight one.
Yep.
And the hard part about running through Waikiki, you really can't see anything, right? You don't see It's not like nowadays when you're on the Queen Highway and there's a helicopter and a whole bit. When did you, was your team, your crew giving you some reports on where he was and that you were eating into his lead?
Not really. First I knew about it, I was about 12 miles in before they had spotted him. I caught him at 15, but I got a cramp in my hamstrings, so I had to stop and get a massage, and then I caught him again at 18, and then I had to go to the bathroom, so I stopped. There happened to be a port-a-john there, and I stopped him. And then I caught him again at 20, and got another cramp. Then I caught him at 21, and I was thinking, I was still going as fast as he was with all those stops, so all I had to do was not stop,
right?
And I beat him. So when I caught him at 21, he looked really bad. That was where the beer story comes in.
Is that real or is that just a story?
I don't know. He just looked really bad. His face was all white.
He was wobbling.
He was all over him, and he looked at me like, go ahead, shoot me now kind of thing. And I was starting to feel really good at that point.
Yeah.
And I had a couple guys join with me and run the last 5 miles, Gordon Dugan, and I can't remember the other guy, but one of them carried a water bottle with water in it, and the other one carried a bottle of defizzed Coke.
Yep.
But it was so cold. I don't like warm defizzed Coke.
Yeah,
and
yeah, yeah.
So whenever I needed a drink, they'd hand it to me, but I ran unencumbered, basically, and I just hammered the last 5 miles, 5.2. It did in 30 minutes.
Yeah, last 5.2 of 30 minutes. So, I mean, you go 11:46, he goes 12:20. Obviously, you know you've got this thing. I always tell the story that, you know, you figure you're coming to the finish of this amazing event. There's going to be cheerleaders. There's going to be bands. When you come across after winning the first Ironman in Capilano Park, is anybody there?
Yeah, there was a couple guys sitting in lawn chairs, and one guy says, are you in the race? And I said, yeah. And he says, well, you're done.
That's exactly what the guy said to me at 80. Yeah, hey, you're done. Of course, I was pitch black when I was. Now, did you finish in daylight or was it dark?
No, it was dark because it was, almost 12 hours.
Right.
And we didn't start right at 7. I can't remember what time we started.
I think he started.
And it was in February, so the days were a little bit shorter.
Right. So
not much because Hawaii is down on the tropic line, so it stays pretty much the same all year round. But
so you win this Ironman thing, which now is 45 full Ironmans. The company sells for $900 million. There's media everywhere. When you finished this thing, did your life change at all?
Not really. It was just another race in Hawaii. I was runner of the year 3 times there, and co-runner once.
Yeah.
And I won most of the races while I was there. I mean, there were better runners around, like Duncan McDonald and Olympian and American record holder of 5,000 meters one time. I beat him a couple times, but and he ran. He's a guy that could run a sub-4-minute mile and a 2:15 marathon.
Yeah, that's so, a nice combo.
Surprisingly, the race I beat him at was a 30K, but I had to run back-to-back PR 15Ks to do that.
Now, since you had the island, you had runners, a lot of runners, a lot of running events, and you had great heritage in swimming. When you win this Ironman thing, the people here in San Diego, the early triathlons, it was sort of a workout for the runners and the swimmers. Yeah. It wasn't really thought of as its own sport, and it wasn't that big a deal if you won any of the local races. Was it sort of like that there when you win this Ironman thing? They're like, yeah, but it's not the Honolulu Marathon.
I'm not really sure what everybody's reaction was.
Yeah.
Most of my friends were runners, obviously.
Right.
Dr. Scaff started that marathon running clinic there.
Yep.
In 75 while I was gone, and I came back in 76. And you go down Capilano Park and from March to December, and you got 1,500, 2,000 people training every day, every Sunday.
That's so wild.
As a group. I mean, they broke up into different speed, ability groups, but you would get people started training for the Honolulu Marathon in March, including one guy was a heart attack victim, and a year later he finished the marathon.
Yeah.
So, well, Scaff was a cardiologist, so he knew what he was doing.
So you win this thing in 78, and then Sports Illustrated comes over in 79 And so you got, now you got Peter Reedmiller, the photographer, and I've got these photos of you and Dunbar before the race. He's in a Superman outfit. And I mean, there was a lot of buzz around, hey, we've got our defending champion, and then the guy who was, you know, who we battled with. So it was sort of like this rivalry between the two of you. Not rivalry, but yeah, it was sort of like it was set up. It was Dunbar against Haller. Did you feel that going into that 79 race?
Yes and no. I mean, John and I were friends and friendly rivalry kind of thing.
Yeah.
I mean, we wanted to beat each other, of course.
Of course.
And, I kind of screwed up on that. I overtrained on some stuff and... I mean, I did a 33-mile run a week before that, running over the Poly and back. And
a 33-mile run the week before?
Yeah, I knew I was fit, and so it wasn't hard. I mean, it was, you know, I was only 29 years old, so.
Right. Yeah. But.
And, but I got a sinus infection, and that kind of weakened me a little bit. I still had the fastest run in that year in the Ironman. But,
yeah, you ran 3:43. So,
well, I ran 3:28.
Did you really?
Yeah, well, I ran 3:27, 3:28, and 3:30, or 3:28 twice. I had the fastest marathon in the first three Ironmans, including 1980 when Dave won.
So wait a second. In the in the results, they have it as I think 3:43 or something.
That might have been somebody else because I know I was under 3:30.
Yeah, I know you were 3:30 that first year or 3:29. But the one thing that hit me was 79, and unless I'm looking at the wrong numbers, did you swim about 20 minutes slower, and was that from the sinus infection?
Well, that, and it was 6 foot swells and 40 knot winds, and I'm not a swimmer.
Right, that's a good point.
my paddler got blown out to sea.
And, oh, my God.
So I was swimming blind, too, and another swimmer came along, and his paddler guided both of us in. When I came out of the water at 1:52 or something like
that. Yes, 1:51:59. Yeah, yeah.
So it was 34 minutes slower. And Hank asks me if I want to quit. And I said, are you kidding? The hard part's over. I just have to ride 112 miles and swim and run a marathon. So I was still the eighth guy out of the water out of 15.
Well, and your and your bike ride was still, you know, obviously didn't take that much out of you because you still rode 6:57. You rode about the same as you rode the year before.
Yeah, unfortunately, Lynn Lemaire is a really fast cyclist, and so is Tom Warren.
Right. Yeah. So that was the year Sports Illustrated does the article, and you were still part of that because you were the defending champion.
Yeah.
Did that change things in terms of awareness for you and awareness for the sport?
Well, a lot of my friends started seeing things like that, people who didn't live in Hawaii and didn't know what I'd been up to. But, in fact, my sister-in-law thought that she should show the article to my future wife because they worked together.
Yeah.
And so she shows the article to Beth, and Beth reads the article and says, who is this guy? I think he's a jerk. I don't want to know him.
Really?
Yeah. So then I met her one day, running, as a matter of fact. And we had a 10K road race in my hometown, and it went by my brother's house. So a bunch of teachers asked him if he would show them the course. And he said, sure. But he and I had just been involved in a construction accident. My calf was crushed when the garage collapsed on me.
Oh, my God.
And so I was just 3 weeks away from that and just barely starting to walk around because my calf was so still bruised and my toe was stuck pointed. So I was trying to stretch it out. So I was riding and swimming to try and loosen it up. But so I started to run that day. He told me they were all pretty slow. And I thought, okay, I can jog along and suffer with them. And turned out I felt better. I thought I would, and she was faster than everybody else. So we ran off and left everybody. And then we ran the next week, just the two of us, and then had the 10K, which I can't believe I actually finished third and ran a 33 for that. But then I didn't see her for a month or so, and I was watching a friend run in the Portland Marathon, and I saw her across the street, so I waved at her, and she came over, and I asked her out. So
that's so cool.
Things changed.
So your calf was crushed, that was after the 79 race.
Yeah, it was September 11th, actually, of 79.
Oh, my God.
Got crushed.
So after you win in 78, how long was it before you were back driving a taxi?
I didn't go back to driving a taxi. What I did was I used to compete in the military pentathlon every summer.
Yeah.
I drove the taxi up until that in 78. Well, I guess I did drive a little bit after that, now I think about it. So it was June of 78. I went back to CIOR in Fort Meade, Maryland. And when I came back, I didn't drive the taxi anymore.
So you obviously you kept doing the Ironman, done 17 of them. How has the event? I mean, I always tell people, yeah, the event's different, but still, what connects everybody is if you're Gordon Haller, who's won the race before, or if you're somebody who's doing it for the first time, nobody really knows if they're going to get to that finish line, right? There's still that adventure aspect of it. When you look at where the Ironman was and where it is, is it still attractive? Is it still something that you're proud to be involved with?
Yes and no. I'm really proud of the growth it's done and the fact that I was one of the people who started the thing.
Yep.
But some of the things that they've done over the years, maybe not so much now, but some of the early World Triathlon Corporation stuff they did, wasn't really happy with
it. Right.
Although I'm Facebook friends with most of the people that, you know, presidents of WTC, the ex-guys like Lou Friedland. And,
good.
And what's that guy after him?
Ben Furtick. That was Ben Furtick,
yeah.
And then they're now...
Furtick hated us because we were suing him for the ownership, but he let us volunteer at the finish line.
See, that part I never understood, that whole thing, and I remember, I think John was worried about getting sued because there was an attorney there that first year in 1978, and he decided, like, listen, I'm just going to have everybody here as a partner in this thing because I don't want to get sued. You can't...
Yeah.
You know, and so that was sort of where a lot of that started, right?
Well, yeah. We formed the Ironman Triathlon Association of all the original people, and then the people in 79 also were members of that.
Yeah.
So John's father was a lawyer.
Oh, Dunbar. Yeah.
Yeah. So, and of course, we didn't really have any reason to worry about getting sued by the people because we were all friends.
Right.
To each other. So, but just in case. But then when the ownership was given to Valerie and then, you know, HTC, we were kind of okay because Valerie was a friend of ours as well.
Sure.
And she grew it, and she did a great job growing the race. And she's always sent out a personal letter before and after, you know, inviting us and then thanking us for coming and all that stuff. And I got nothing but praise for Valerie.
She was wonderful. And actually, she came this year to Kona.
I saw the pictures, yeah.
It was
awesome.
Watched
your show.
Oh, thanks!
So we try to follow most of the races, at least the ones we have friends doing. And, of course, Kona, we've got to watch whether we have friends in it or not.
Of course. So,
great to have an Ironman live.
How have you changed in the way you train based on aging? Because you're how old now?
67.
And you've always been ahead of the curve when it comes to, like I said, in terms of nutrition, in terms of science of training. How have you adapted to being 67?
Probably not as well as I should. I still try to overdo it, I guess. But I'm smart enough to hired a coach.
Oh, that's a good move.
He's done over 300 triathlons, and I think he's done maybe 12, 13 Ironman.
Nice.
And I've got a swim coach separate from that. And so 2 days a week I swim with her. She's a professional triathlete. Her name is Erin Dolan. She lives right here in Northwest Arkansas.
Uh huh.
She's in the top 10 American women of the professional triathlons. And so she kicks my butt a lot in the swimming pool. I'm getting a little bit faster, but I haven't gotten much more endurance. I need to start switching to some long stuff. Well, I keep track of all my workouts still in the same training log.
Wow, so you've got your training log going back to the 70s.
Back to 1969.
Oh, my God. That is so
May
cool.
May of 1969.
Very
Which,
cool.
Which, unfortunately, as you recall, 69 was the year I was sick, so I have like a week's worth of entries, and then I have like 3 months that says sick. So it's kind of a dubious start. But so I keep track of all the workouts. I still work out. I've added a lot of core workouts because of my coach. This morning was the fourth day in a row I've gotten up at 6:30 to work out, And I never get up early. That's only my fourth day this year I've gotten up early, so it's the fourth day this week. Most of the time I do core work in the evening, but on days like yesterday when it's a swim workout, which we do at 7 at night, I don't feel like going home, changing clothes, and getting back to work out again. So I just decided that in the mornings I would do a quick 15, 20-minute core workout and then go to work and do the rest of my workouts in the evening.
So when you look back, obviously for all of us on the outside, the most important race in Gordon Haller's career was the 78 Ironman. But in your mind, what do you feel was your best race or the race that meant the most to you?
The 1975 National AAU 50-kilometer road championships.
Wow. And why?
I finished third in 307. That's 602 a mile, 31 miles.
602 a mile. Wow.
and I ran with two teammates, and we finished third as a team. But the main thing about that was I wasn't even supposed to run that race. We had a club, the Golden West Athletic Club down in Long Beach. And Dr. John Pagliano, I don't know if you remember him.
I do.
He was one of my teammates, and Vernon Masakawa, my former training partner, was the other one. And so they finished 19th and 21st, and I was third. The guy that won the race, Carl Swift, set an American record of 2:53 or something like that. And so I knew I wasn't going to get him, but I started passing all kinds of big-name people, at least people had big names back then in Southern California.
Yeah.
But and before I knew it, I mean, I was in third place.
Wow.
It was kind of a cool course. Is that at Hanson Dam?
Yes.
And it was three 10-mile loops and then a 1-mile loop. And you go past the finish line at 30 miles, you just got a one more loop to do. Like, oh man. But I ran a 6:14 last mile, hanging in there, and finished it. And I only ran the race because one of our teammates got sick. But I was running 120 miles a week with him. So I was an obvious person to substitute.
God.
So we started out running kind of slow. They said, you got to go slow so you can make sure you finish it. And we ran 33 minutes for the first 5 miles. But we were running slower. I mean, we were running at 35-minute pace. And at 3 miles, I thought, this is way too slow. I'm going to pick it up. I'd rather go faster now and then suffer at the end than be bored to death here at the beginning. So went off and left them and ran 33 for that first five. But then the next one, next five was like 30-30.
Yeah.
Next five was 30 flat. The next five was 29.09. The next five was 28.54. And then the last one was 29.05. So it was my second fastest 5 mile split. And then at 6:14. So I was starting to feel a little bit at the end, but I felt great the whole way. And maybe because we did start slow the first 3 miles, I did that. But never got bored and never had to suffer. So it was good.
With everything that you've done now, and you've seen the changes in, you know, in science and everything else, when you look back at your training log leading into Kona, or not Kona, leading into that 78 race, and I remember looking at it and going, there's a lot of running in here. And I think you ran
87 miles the first 18 days of that month.
Wait, how many?
187.
You ran 187 miles leading into the Ironman.
Yeah, those last 2.5 weeks, whatever it was.
Yeah, yeah. And
I rode about 40 miles.
Total.
Yeah, and I swam 6 times, I think, for a total of 8,000 meters.
Love that. Yeah, and all that stuff's overrated. It comes down to the run anyways.
Yeah.
Unless you've got big surf. Unless you got big surf, it really comes down to the run.
Yeah.
Very cool. Hey, Gordon, thanks as always for taking so much time. It's always such an honor to get to chat with you. I'm jazzed that you're going to be coming back to Kona. That's going to be really, really fun. Number 18.
Yeah, we've been looking forward to it for a while. We're going to bring over all our kids and grandkids and hopefully you have a big enough place to stay. We've been looking right now to find it.
Well, let me know. We've got a bunch of realtors over there who can help you out.
Yeah, what?
We have a number of realtors who can help if you're looking for a place over there.
Cool.
Yeah, happy
Although
to help.
I do remember Mo Matthews.
Yes.
Said that we might be able to stay at his place last time I was there. He said, yeah, give us some looks up. So
there
I don't
you
know,
go.
I might give him a call for at least until the rest of the family gets there.
Exactly.
We were going to spend a couple of weeks instead of just the 1 week.
Yeah, absolutely. Free is always good.
Yeah. Especially, I'm getting close to retirement here. I need to start saving my money more.
Well, Gordon, thank you again for always being such a class act. So, yeah, so when you come to Kona next year, we'll have to have you come on the breakfast show. That'd be fun.
Yeah, I look forward to that. Always enjoyable time.
Love it. Again, our guest, Gordon Howler, the first ever Ironman World Champion from back in 1978. Still going at it. He will be there. He was there for the first one. He'll be there for the 40th one. Actually, the 40th anniversary. Actually, I think we're over 40.
50th as well, but we'll see.
Exactly. Again, my name is Bob Babbitt. This is Babbittville Radio. We're brought to you by Tough Man Triathlon Series, VeloFix.com, ATVSwimSpas.com, our Challenged Athletes Foundation. We have now raised over $80 million and sent out over 18,000 grants to keep challenged athletes in the game of life through sport. Check out any of our interviews on Babbittville.com or on iTunes. And as always, endurance lives here.